When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
You wouldn't expect to hear that we're America's third best city for beer like this one. Or home to vibes like this. And this. It might surprise you that we're top 10 for immersive art that's like...
Whoa.
And... Not to mention, we have one of the top zoos in the country. So can a city with the country's best pro soccer team, ranking as a top culinary destination in the world, be in your own backyard? Yes, Columbus. Plan your summer at experiencecolumbus.com/summer.
Welcome, everyone, to a brand new episode of On Call with KB. I am your host, KB, and I am looking forward to this segment today because we are going to dive into some iconic classic Grey's Anatomy with season 3, episode 3, called Sometimes a Fantasy. I am joined with superfan, comedian, TV I Say podcast host, and honestly, iconic TV connoisseur, because I follow you on Twitter, so I'm super excited about this. Ashley Ray, welcome to the show.
Hi, I'm so glad to be here. Grey's Anatomy is probably, I could probably have a degree in Grey's Anatomy.
Listen, if they are offering courses, you know, I think that like we could do some guest lecture series, like, hey guys, come join us. Every week we can give you all of the tea on this iconic Shonda Rhimes show. It's actually kind of hard to believe that this was her first show because it was so fantastic.
It's so good. And just, I went back and rewatched this episode for this. And just again, I immediately got hooked. Like 2 hours later, I was still watching. Like it still grabs you no matter how many times you've seen the show.
Yes, yes. And I don't mean that as a slight. I mean, I'm just so impressed that like her first show was able to catapult in the way that it did and currently still is into season 19. I'm like, girl, give me that formula because it is really like you are the one. Like this is amazing. Like,
I want to know every single behind the scenes detail of how she put this show together.
Truly.
Yeah.
So in this episode of Grey's Anatomy, you know, the main patient is Megan, portrayed by young Abigail Breslin. I mean, she's been killing it since she was a child, apparently.
Yes.
So she is a pediatric patient who is in foster care and believes she is a superhero because she doesn't feel pain. And so let me start off by saying, actually, one of my favorite things about this episode is, you know, this is the journey for Alex where Addison is really pushing him. She sees something in him and believes that he could be fantastic in peds. And he is truly like fighting it, running from it, not doing it. So this is actually one of my favorite character evolutions.
Yes, it's that's when it starts, right here.
And it's so sad because Alex has like the most traumatic childhood out of pretty much anyone on this show. I don't know, like him and Meredith kind of rival each other in that, but I feel like his was worse. And so
his was definitely worse. Like I think like he talks about his dad beating him, them being homeless at some point. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like it isn't really until we get the introduction of Joe, who is the only person who understands what it's like to grow up in the same way as Alex, like truly, because Joe was also homeless at one point. It's almost like he's running away from himself and all that the pain that he went through.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why he puts up all these walls and impedes. You can't put up walls. It's hard.
You can't. And so Alex, you know, he grows up essentially impedes. And Megan is really the first patient that kind of challenges him in so many ways. Because also she talks back to him, which is funny because I feel like she's just a version of Alex. Like she's probably talking to the way Alex would talk to adults as a child.
Exactly. She's like, I can't beat her. I can handle this. Punch me right now. Like, every time she asks someone to punch her in the stomach, it is the funniest thing.
It is. And every time I'm also like, but girl, please stop asking these adults to abuse you. Like,
yeah, to hurt you. This is please. Not,
like, this is not good at all. So, you know, Dr. Bailey is like, Alex, test her threshold for pain in ice water. So, you know, he does it. Yeah. He gets schooled.
Another adorable scene where he's like, oh, we can both, I'll do it with you. And you're like, oh, Alex.
So cute. And then he's like, oh my God, girl, take your arm out. It's going to fall off. What is going to happen? He like runs away screaming, which is hilarious because people are literally watching him through the window laughing. But it's so interesting because, you know, her foster parents are really adamant that they're not abusing her. She's really adamant, like, hey, I'm good. They're not. And come to find out, she has a genetic disorder called congenital insensitivity to pain with antihidrosis. And so she has SIPA. That's really the underlying cause. We'll get into that with the experts. But apart from, you know, Megan and Alex's journey into peds, we have Izzy, who is still just shrouded in trauma, honestly, from Denny's death. She can't walk into the doors of Seattle Grace anymore right now. I mean, she's still barely able to wake up in the morning and to like function as a human being. Yeah. So the idea of going back to work is literally, you know, kind of stifling her and really kind of she's struggling. So,
and yeah, I do love her like beautiful little short monologue she gets where she's like, you know, every girl dreams of that wedding dress and I have to stop dreaming of that before I can go back. But it's like, girl, maybe do it in your bedroom. You know, don't just stand outside the hospital all day
for hours, literally hours. Hey, girl, are you cold? Are you hungry? Do you need to go to the bathroom?
Yeah. Are you good? Like, yeah.
Wait, I just had so many questions. And then, of course, elsewhere, which we're going to dive more into, Meredith is finally just dating. She's dating Finn. She's dating Derek. She's finally just dating. Like, shout out to you, girl, because I feel like you skip so many steps with men. and then we have Burke, who is recovering. And Christina kind of is being a little bit of a pain in his ass right now.
Like, yeah.
Just a little bit.
She's being whiny. She's being a little whiny.
She's really thinking about herself and less about him and his healing process, which is interesting. An interesting turn for her. And then, of course, we have George, who is incapable of communicating like an adult.
And yeah, who is a child the whole episode.
The entire episode. So, you know, let me just say, obviously, you are a Grey's connoisseur. You, you know, could teach the master class on it. So when did you first fall in love with it? Was it the pilot? Did it take you a little bit? You know, kind of. Why are you still here with Grace?
It was love at first sight. It was the pilot immediately. And I remember watching the day it debuted. It was like after, it was like when the show was on Sundays. It was after, I think, the Super Bowl, some football game. I don't know. Didn't care about that part. I was just like, huh, what is this show with doctors? And it just got me immediately. It was like the music. I loved that intro with the PSAP song. It was like so just cool to me as a high schooler. And then it was sexy and funny, and the cast had immediate chemistry to me. Like, I just remember being like, oh, these people know each other. Like, they really know how to, like, do the funny one-liners and just bounce off each other. And it was exciting to watch them all flirt. And it pulled me in immediately. I saw myself in Meredith Grey. My best friend, like, we would argue over which one of us was Christina, and then eventually I was like, no, I'm Meredith, you're Christina. Like, and I think that's true because I still watch the show into the 9th season, just like Meredith. Like, I would not give up on it. And all my friends, like, gave up. They stopped watching, like, when Christina left or, you know, when McDreamy dies. And I am still here. I watch every single Thursday. Like, I don't get behind on episodes, even though like no, like everyone from the original is gone now, except for Bailey and Weber. And I still watch.
Oh my gosh. Listen, I will say the very first time I saw the pilot, I loved it. You bring up a good point when it comes out to the cast chemistry, when it comes down to that. I really need to find out who did the casting because honestly, they are so good. Like it truly is like the best blend of on-screen personalities. And so even the way the characters are written and then the way that they are acted, I think it just works so seamlessly. And honestly, like the first three seasons of Grey's are some of the most iconic, episodes of television that I have ever seen. Now, naturally, during COVID, definitely a struggle. And also because every single TV show pivoted to having a COVID storyline. And I was
And they did not do great with their COVID storyline.
I mean, Meredith was in a coma for 90% of it. And it was like, oh.
Yeah, it was just like, what are we doing? Like, what are we watching? Why are we just watching her on a beach?
Right.
Like, what is all of this?
It's so hard because, I mean, I do think in order for the show, obviously, to continue, like, it needs to continue to reinvent itself in new ways.
Yeah.
And bringing in a fresh class really is the only way to do it. I mean, because also the OGs are tired. Like, the OGs are like, leave.
Honestly, at this point, I wouldn't mind if, like, they flash forward somehow. We see Meredith and she's somehow invented, I don't know, like a time travel something-ass machine. And then instead of, like, bringing in a new class, they just go back in time and we see it from her mom going to medical school.
So
and it's like, it's still Grey's Anatomy. I would rather go backwards and see her, like, having her affair with Richard and all of that than watch this, like, new cast. I'm just saying Grey's Anatomy, the prequel, get into it.
Yeah, I'm like, actually, that doesn't sound bad. Like, going back to, like, Ellis and just kind of exploring Ellis's life and a young Richard and what that tort affair did, you know, between her and Thatcher.
The misogyny and racism they faced at the hospital, like, their intern class. I think it could be very, like, Grey's Anatomy, Mad Men-esque. And I'd probably like it more than what we're getting with this new class.
I'm not mad at it. Okay, so in this episode, you know, I want to start with Callie and O'Malley, and mostly because not George went behind Callie's back to convince her patient not to have surgery instead of just talking directly to her. Like, listen, I know that George has a lot of issues. I mean, we see with George's family in particular, he has a lot of issues with sticking up for himself. He's just not very assertive. He doesn't really express himself that well. We even see it in season two with Meredith, where he basically is just like following her like a puppy instead of honestly just telling her how he feels. And so it's interesting because in this dynamic, Callie is vastly more assertive in like every single way, but also she has to be because she's an orthopedic surgeon in a mostly like male dominated field. She has to learn how very quickly, just even at work, how to assert herself. So their balance is interesting when it comes to their relationship. But in this particular episode, I'm like, now, George, you are just dead wrong because she did ask you multiple times and you just
she's being so direct.
Sure.
Yeah,
sure. And now you're being passive aggressive and now you're interfering with my patient. So like, it is a problem.
It's like clear he doesn't trust her, doesn't like her. This is when I started being like, please just break up.
Yes.
Like, what am I supposed to root for in this relationship?
So I was going to say, you know, like, what did you think about their relationship overall as a couple and not just in this episode? Because I actually never thought they should have dated. I think that this was a huge mistake in terms of writing.
Same. That's how I feel about it, is that they kind of just needed to give O'Malley something. They didn't really know what to do with O'Malley and the Meredith thing because she already had this other like love triangle with two guys, which also, by the way, one of my favorite openings ever is just that in this episode, Meredith is like, wish I was having a threesome with two dudes. It's absolutely great. But, but I think they didn't know what to do with O'Malley. So they were like, oh, just like mush him with this character. And it never made sense to me. Like, I was always just like, why would Callie like this boring dude? Like, Callie was so much better. And I didn't like that it made Meredith and everyone be mean to Callie. Like, everyone was so mean to Callie. And I didn't like that this relationship put that character in that position.
You know what? That's true. I mean, like, first off, I didn't like how George was, Meredith, you got to kick her out. First off, George, this is your girlfriend. And it's very awkward for me to be like, hey, girl, you got to go. Why can't you just have a conversation with her and say, hey, I'm not really ready to move in together. I thought this was going to be temporary. It's expanding into a bit more. We need to discuss, you know, where you'll be going and what the timeline will be for that. Instead of throwing it on Meredith, which the fact that you even think it's appropriate to be like, Meredith, the girl,
to do that.
Out. Right. No.
Right.
No.
Totally wrong.
So let's get back to Meredith in this dream where she wanted to have this threesome, which Girl, good for you. Listen, I love that Meredith is dating. It's really refreshing to see. It was lovely to revisit this episode, you know, just to remind myself that I should be dating more. And go ahead, Meredith, like, live in spirit and in truth. Now, one thing I will say is that we see that it becomes more of like a pissing contest between Derek and Finn and less about romancing her, which is, you know, why she has that grand monologue. But she's right. It's hard being an intern. You're literally like the bottom of the barrel. And at the end of the day, she's like, if I'm choosing to get dressed and spend my time with either of you, y'all better step it up. So I'm like, listen, are you Team McDreamy or, you know, are you looking for McBet?
I am Team McDreamy all day, every day, since day one till the end, even now. I like McDreamy is Meredith's one true love. That's why after he died, they never let her date anyone hotter than Derek because no one will ever compare with Derek. Like the chemistry between those two from the pilot, it's just electric. There's no one, the way he looks at her. The McVet thing was such a silly distraction. I think they were mostly like to play it up in the magazines, like, oh no, which one will she pick? Because it was so clear, like McDreamy and Meredith were endgame perfect and they couldn't like rush to get there. But like it was always McDreamy. Always McDreamy. And
I mean, listen.
I was just gonna say the monologue she does at the end, rewatching this episode, it moved me so much that as soon as it was over, I changed all of my bios on every dating app to Meredith's monologue at the end. So all of them are just like, I want moonlight. I want candy. I want heat.
Listen, I'm not mad at it. Again, I told you, I was very inspired. Like, man, maybe I will get back on the apps. Because honestly, girl, good for you. Just dating is fun. It is fun. It should be fun. She was having fun until she was not having fun and then had to give that big speech. But I just find it so, you know, I am on the side of I do believe that eventually Meredith and Derek are in game. But I do think in the very beginning, beyond the chemistry and beyond the looks that he gives, Derek is actually a terrible partner to her. Like, quite literally awful. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that he had not dealt with all of his issues from Addison's affair.
With Addison. Oh, absolutely. He has all these trust issues, a lot of baggage around women outshining him, women, you know, following their own dreams, being in different, you know, far away when Meredith was like, oh, well, or when he was like, oh, I'm gonna have to go and do this thing in DC or whatever. You know, that's why we get the famous Christina line, you know, like, he might be dreamy, but he's not the son you are, or whatever it is. You know, that I think is a big lesson in the show that they have to kind of deal with his insecurities. Mm-hmm. But I think that would have been the case with any guy Meredith ended up with.
I mean, I think it needs to be the case with any human being. Like, we should all be doing work to better ourselves. But it's glaring with Derek because, you know, I feel like a lot of fans do romanticize their relationship from top to bottom. And for me, it was different. In the very beginning, I was like, oh, he talks to her real crazy. Like, I was like, are you guys listening to the way that he communicates with her? Because it's not good.
Yeah, like, it is not like, good.
It's not and healthy.
It's not healthy to like put a girl in a position where she's like, pick me, choose me, love me. Like, you're down bad if your guy has you doing that. Like, that's not good.
Yes.
But also, they had so much chemistry and it was hot. So
it's like, it's truly, you just have to pick your level of chaos in this show when it comes to relationships, quite frankly, because there are a lot of issues, you know, with Denny and Izzy, a lot, but I adored them.
I adored them in such a problematic relationship, but I wanted it to work.
It's probably worse than Meredith and Derek. I mean, Derek eventually gets there, but, you know, Denny dies and it's also like, oh, everything goes downhill. But I will say the way he loves Izzy is very pure, and the way he teaches her how to love life a bit more, like enjoy life, to truly live and to truly love. He teaches her so many things throughout the course of their wildly inappropriate relationship in which she would have been fired, you know, well before he died. Yeah. I think, and quote unquote quit, but really, girl, you was going to be fired that same day. So I don't know if you quit.
Yeah. You're
definitely fired. But here we are. So,
like, okay, sure, you're not a surgeon anymore. Well, we weren't going to let you be. So,
right. Like, girl, pack it up. It's okay. But we can see that, like, he has such a lasting impact on her. And we see it in this episode. Like, we see how hard it is for her to even be able to, like, function in life without it. And so something I do like is here you can kind of see the glimpse. Because Alex had, you know, they had already had their kind of, like, sexual will they, won't they scenario happening. Like, you know, friends with benefits occasionally. And when she fell in love with Denny, like, it changed Alex. You could visibly see how it changed, because I don't think he was expecting to really like her. Like,
yeah,
I think he thought he would be okay with them just being completely physical. And then the way he shows up for her when Denny dies is also, like, so incredible to watch, because he's watching the woman he likes go through an unimaginable heartbreak, but he's still trying to be there for her. And so even in this episode, she's standing outside for hours and he's like, okay, like,
come on, girl. Like, he still checks in on her. And Alex is such a sweetie.
He is. Even when he's, like, running away from being one. Like,
yeah, he can't help it. He just cares.
Oh my gosh, it's just so good to see. So what is your favorite kind of relationship-driven scene this episode specifically?
Oof. I mean, I feel like I have to go with that opening of just Meredith, like, dreaming of this threesome, because I always think it's so interesting that she's like, I want to be dated and romanced and all this. But it does seem like she wants to kind of just slut around at this point in her life. It's like, I don't know why she's trying to rush into anything with Derek or anyone at any point of, like, you know, just Meredith, have fun, focus on your job. And so she has this dream, but then she's like, oh yeah, like, you know, just date me and let's see which one of you's a gentleman who can make me feel like a lady. And it's like, girl, this morning you were dreaming about getting double penetrated. Don't play around.
Girl, it's like, girl, but also truly, I need you to focus on your job, because things are falling to the wayside at work, girl.
Things, like, you're not doing a great job, girly.
Why are you here? Are you here to work or are you here to find a boo? Because honestly, I'm not mad at either. I just need for you to decide which one you're here for.
Yeah, like, I don't even think Meredith was on a case this episode. She just, like, got pulled into the brain thing when Derek was like, oh, this is a way I can, you know, manipulate her into being with me.
Yep.
But I don't even think she was, like, assigned a patient.
No, she was literally just walking around. Girl, what? Yeah.
Like, what? Are you, what are you busy with?
And also, girl, this is your training. So, like, I need you to find something to do fully and totally, please. And maybe she would if the attendings had something to do, but apparently they don't, because look at Addison. So, you know, here comes Mark, which, shout out to McSteamy. You know, he's always popping up for his girl, always showing up for a good time, not a long time. And Addison is like, can you go home? And he's like, no.
No. Unless you come with me, Addison. I mean, McSteamy is the hottest. I did always think McSteamy's hotter than McDreamy. Like, obviously. But I actually always liked Addison and him together. I always liked Mark and Addison together, actually.
You know what? I think that they were better suited for each other. Like, I find that Derek, I don't know. I think that, like, in certain instances, and I don't want to say this in a wrong way, because I do believe that Addison is a strong woman, but I think that Meredith challenged him in ways that he had not been challenged before.
Yeah.
And there are certain things that she could tell him that only she could say it. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I think Addison and Derek at that point had so much just baggage between each other and hatred between each other that it was just kind of clear it was never going to work. Like, they didn't have that same chemistry anymore. It just was gone. So,
and Mark, much like Alex, is very misunderstood in the sense that, like, yeah, they like having sex, but at the end of the day, they're also very kind people. Like, when you really think about it, you're like, dang, they're actually kind people. And they make mistakes, of course. I mean, we're all humans who make mistakes, but they're kind people. And Mark really loved Addison. Like, it was not ideal, naturally, because she is your best friend's wife.
Not great.
You know, not stellar. But I do think that they found something in each other that was unique for the both of them. And so I think for that time in their lives, he truly, truly loved her. But let's get into your faves, because you mentioned that Burke and Christina are your favorite couple, which is wild to me, because they are definitely not mine. So let's get into it, because I adore Christina. Like, she is actually my favorite character.
I love Christina. Christina's my favorite character. And Burke is just someone who, like, accepted her as she was. I love that about them. I think the moment that got me for them was when he finally goes over to her place and it's like a mess. And she's just like, this is who I am. Take it or leave it. And I was like, that's me. Wow. Like, yes. Just I need someone who's like, I take it. That's who you are. So, you know, I loved that aspect about them. But then you see like a shift in Christina's character this season where she suddenly starts becoming very about like her image and her image with Burke. And it's like, we're Burke and Christina, the amazing surgeons. And she has to be seen that way. And so here, when Burke is like not a surgeon, he can't do it anymore and he wants to quit and all this stuff, you know, that really shakes her and makes her kind of act like an asshole here.
I mean, it's mostly like her identity is wrapped up in them being this surgical power couple. And when he is injured, she doesn't allow him the time or the space to just be able to heal and feel whatever emotions he has about it. She like is centering herself like, oh, I'm tired of being a caretaker. And it's like, girl, if you don't sit down, because honestly, this idea of seeing him as superhuman when he really is just a man. And honestly, he just all right, girl. Like, girl.
Yeah.
He is like,
calm down. Right. He's okay. Like, yes. You know, I was like, just give him some space right now. Maybe y'all could just take a break for a few weeks while he does, you know, physical therapy. You don't need to be this intense about it.
Right. And also, I find that like, two, you know, he's giving her the facts kind of like, oh, this is how long it could potentially take for me to get back to, you know, where I am. And she's seeing it as defeat. But I'm also kind of like, she's not allowing him like to just have whatever feelings he has on his own. She's projecting everything onto him. And I'm like, girl, where is the grace? Like, you know, so give him just a little bit.
Yeah, give him space, give him grace, focus on you, Christina.
Oh, and yet she's not. And yet she's taking this into her case. And yet she's talking to this lady who's an actual caregiver for her husband for years because he, you know, is having these seizures and she has this newborn baby. And Christina's like complaining about being.
Yeah, complaining about her. Yeah. She's just like, and you don't even understand how hard it actually is for the caretaker. And she's complaining so much that this guy is like, I'm about to drop a baby.
Right. And she doesn't understand. I'm like, girl, she has a newborn and a husband that she is a two-time caregiver.
Yeah, like Christina. Clearly, she's a little more nurturing than you in the first place. Like,
if I were that woman, I would have been like, now, ma'am, I need you to just whatever issues you have, and I need you to pause because we need to figure out what's wrong with my husband instead of making this happen.
Yeah, like, honey, I see you're having your own issues, but this is don't put this on me.
Okay, so is this in this episode, since they are your faves? I mean, who could you empathize more with?
I mean, I was on Burke's team here. You know, I understood when Burke was like, you know, I don't know that I want to be back. And when he like is standing there with Izzy and they have a moment, you know, and everybody being like, you're missed. I like Burke's intensity as a surgeon and everything. But I did like that they gave him this moment to be like, well, who is he without that? You know, so yeah, I was like, Christina, come on, stop making it about you. Stop complaining to everybody or be open to Burke about it or just give him the space he needs. And I think that's why Burke doesn't feel comfortable telling Christina, you know, what he intends to do.
You know what? It's interesting because in this episode, Burke really doesn't have friends in this hospital. Like, truly.
Yeah.
So Christina has kind of like, it just so happens that their intern class gelled really well.
Yeah.
Because it's very easy to see how, you know, people could be very isolated. But it's really like, is glaring in this episode, I think, because he has to rely so much on Christina that he doesn't really have anyone else. So she really is kind of the only person that he has. And when O'Malley was like, oh, you're missed, I was like, is he though? Because
by who? Right. It's really like, by who? Like, who misses him? Because I think he just kind of competes with everybody, you know? So it's kind of, I think his actions here are totally understandable.
Yeah, I would have to agree. And girl, Christina, you down bad. I need you to sit down.
The wait is over. The Chi is back on Paramount Plus, and the stakes have never been higher. Everything changes on the South Side when a new threat comes to power in the Showtime original series from Emmy winner Lena Waithe. Battle lines will be drawn, alliances will shift, and danger lies around every corner, leaving everyone to wonder who they can trust. Visit ParamountPlus.com/TheShot to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. Subscription auto-renews. Restrictions apply.
Father's Day is coming, a day we celebrate the guy who's always there for us. to crack a dad joke. Well, you know what's not a dad joke? Getting $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker with the purchase of his favorite cocktail capsule pack. $50 off. No dad joke. See, this is a dad joke. I lost my glasses today, and guess who I bumped into? Everyone. But the Bartesian Cocktail Maker, it's no joke. Each cocktail capsule contains real fruit juices and all-natural bitters, so dad can make over 60 premium cocktails he loves. Sidecars, old fashions, gimlets, all with the push of a button. So, for the dad who loves a cocktail with friends and a good joke from time to time, get the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. $50 off now until Father's Day. Visit bartesian.com/father to get 50 off the best premium cocktail maker for dad at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
Truly. Okay. So back to Izzy. What do you think will take her, what it will take to bring her back fully? Because I haven't watched season three in a really long time, so I don't really remember the details of how she comes back.
I don't really remember. I know in the previous episodes, like Bailey is like, it's my fault. I wasn't there to teach you. And she like helps her with the whole cake thing. And that's what like makes Izzy be like, oh, I can even go to the hospital. So it's not another pep talk from Bailey because she already had that. So I'm going to guess at this point, it's going to be some magical words from Dr. Weber. Like it's going to take something like a Weber talk to get her to be like, you're right. I am ready. Or something equivalent to that, or the way they usually like to do it. I can't remember if this happens. Like they always do that thing where when someone leaves the hospital, they'll be like out somewhere or they like go to visit the hospital and then someone has a medical emergency and they're yeah. like forced to act. And then they're like, oh, I guess I can't walk away from medicine. So I can't remember if that happens after this, but one of those two things.
Yes. Absolutely. Or maybe it's Alex, you know, giving an unexpected pep talk because he can't True. Be very kind and good with pep talks when he wants to be.
Yeah.
So maybe it's like a gentle nudging from Alex.
And I could see like Alex, his new thing with peds making her be kind of be like, oh, wow, you found this new thing and new passion. You know, maybe I can redirect to.
Maybe. I feel like Izzy's honestly most defining character moments on this show are around Denny, because even when she has cancer, and she's having like sex with the ghost, it's still about Denny. So, you know, yeah. like I feel like in every capacity, really, those were kind of some of her biggest defining moments. And then that thing.
Yeah. And then O'Malley. They just tornadoed her. Yeah. O'Malley. And then they tornadoed her character. And it was kind of like, okay. Like, oh, like no. Bye, Izzy.
Oh, no. Okay. But back to Alex. So, you know, Alex has this case, and truthfully, he doesn't believe Megan at first, but, you know, we get there, and we finally figure out what's going on between him, Dr. Bailey, and Addison. They figure out what's going on with Megan. So I just have to say, when it comes to this case of her, you know, having this high tolerance of pain and then also internal bleeding, which, like, girl, of course you have internal bleeding.
Yeah.
You're asking everyone who meets you to punch you.
To punch you.
Like, yes. Yes.
She's
girl.
Like, hi, my name is Addie. Punch me. Like, that's how she greets people.
She's like, listen, she was like, you know, I'm Megan. I had a hard life. You can punch me. It's like, girl, what? Like,
what? No. Calm down.
Like, she was like, oh, yeah, I get beat up a lot. And come to find out, girl, you are not getting beat up a lot. You are instigating this. Oh, children. Children are wildly hilarious when they want to be. And it's like, girl, you are not making smart choices. Like, yeah. What are you doing?
And then I do like that she thinks she has, you know, she's a superhero. I do like that they like centered in a really kid childish way of thinking where it's like, of course she thinks like, oh, I'm special. I have these superpowers. I do like that they set it up that way.
Well, I do also love that O'Malley buys into it, right? Like, I love that he, like, knows the whole superhero origin story, and he's like, oh, well, if she's missing, you know, she's not going to want you to do surgery on her, because then what's that going to do to her powers? So, like, of course she's going to disappear. Like, O'Malley is basically, like, he has the same childlike wonder, which I love. Like, I actually love that they connected that, because it makes sense.
Yeah. What I love more, Alex repeating it to her later, like Alex being like, oh, I hate you, O'Malley, this is so annoying. And then later being like, well, Green Lantern's still a hero even without his ring, right?
And it's like,
I was like, Alex, you were listening. You're not an asshole.
Like, not you listened. And then you repeated it back to her in a moment of
and it was
vulnerability.
Like, and you knew it's what she needed to hear. Like, aw.
Alex preparing for fatherhood to children that he doesn't see for decades.
Oh god, I hate that whole story.
Little did we know. So did you think that this was, as someone who, you know, is not a medical professional, but did you think it was a realistic case for the show?
Yeah, I guess. I'm sure this exists. I feel like I've seen it on Oprah or Maury or one of those, like, Maury or one of those, you know, daytime shows. So I feel like this is probably a real thing. And I could see Alex being so concerned about child abuse that that's what eventually, like, gets them to run all these tests instead of just, you know, giving her stitches and sending her on her way. So, yeah, it feels realistic.
Yes. So it definitely does exist. It normally is found in newborns. Like, they normally can diagnose it in newborns. But because she's in foster care, it was probably overlooked.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, oh, okay, got it. So, I mean,
feels realistic.
Yeah.
In the Grays world, sure.
Right. Because they did not dive that deep into it, and they didn't go terribly in depth, but they gave us a little hint of it. We got to see a few cases of her pain, or her tolerance for pain being high. I mean, when she took out those staples with her teeth.
I was like, I believe her. Like, that would have been enough for me. We don't need to get ice out. Like, yeah, she just pulled staples out of her arm with her teeth. Like, okay.
I'm like, oh, okay. And she just sat there and was like, okay, what next? And it's like, okay, well then, yeah, I guess. Yeah. I guess, girl, yes, you win. So I have to ask, who's your favorite character this episode?
I'm going to go with Megan, the little girl. I love that, you know, like when they're all arguing and then she just like runs away and then Alex is the one who's like, where's the little girl? And I'm like, isn't that the first that like wheel her into the room instead of just leaving her in the hallway?
it's the way they were not watching her. And I was like, yeah, well, she's still a little kid. Like,
she's still a little kid, you guys. Like, you should really be paying attention, you know? So I would say she was my favorite. And then I always love when they connect like the overall message of the story with like one of the patients. And here, obviously, it was like pain is there for a reason. You know, it helps you grow and all of them are experiencing some kind of pain. And so I like that, you know, this like sassy little girl is the one mirroring like the biggest kind of theme of the episode.
The Grays is known for their parallels.
It's
one of the reasons why I keep watching. And I do have to say that my favorite character of this episode definitely has to go to Alex. He's the only one that has any sense in this episode. I mean, at the end of the day, George is being wildly irrational. So is Christina, actually.
Yeah.
Meredith is trying to have fun, but it's kind of working, but it's not really. But also, she's not doing any work. Yeah, it's like, meh. But Alex is doing work. He's being loving. He's giving Izzy this pep talk about pain. He is, you know, working it out with Megan, trying to figure out her issues, but also being kind to this little child. I don't know. Alex just takes the MVP of this episode award for me.
Yeah. He also like still has some fun. Like the episode when Meredith is on her little coffee date and Alex is like, let's take bets. What's going to happen? Yeah. It's like, he's doing it all this up.
He is. He is a Renaissance man of sorts. But thank you again. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. This was so much fun.
The wait is over. The Chi is back on Paramount Plus, and the stakes have never been higher. Everything changes on the South Side when a new threat comes to power in the Showtime original series from Emmy winner Lena Waithe. Battle lines will be drawn, alliances will shift, and danger lies around every corner, leaving everyone to wonder who they can trust. Visit ParamountPlus.com/TheShot to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. Subscription auto-renews. Restrictions apply.
Father's Day is coming, a day we celebrate the guy who's always there for us. To crack a dad joke. Well, you know what's not a dad joke? Getting $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker with the purchase of his favorite cocktail capsule pack. $50 off. No dad joke. See, this is a dad joke. I lost my glasses today, and guess who I bumped into? Everyone. But the Bartesian Cocktail Maker, it's no joke. Each cocktail capsule contains real fruit juices and all-natural bitters, so dad can make over 60 premium cocktails he loves. Sidecars, old fashions, gimlets, all with the push of a button. So, for the dad who loves a cocktail with friends and a good joke from time to time, get the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. $50 off now until Father's Day. Visit bartesian.com/father to get 50 off the best premium cocktail maker for dad at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
I am thrilled to be diving into season 3, episode 3 of Grey's Anatomy called Sometimes a Fantasy, which is a wildly interesting title, with nutritional geneticist extraordinaire and founder of Color of Genes, Dr. Karen Onyeneho. Hello.
Hi. Hey, KB.
Oh my goodness. So I'm thrilled to have you. Listen, Dr. Karen's research background focuses on investigating the genetic architecture of type 2 diabetes mellitus in adults of African ancestry in order to develop interventions to combat the disease at the molecular level through genetic testing. And so we're going to let her talk about this later on in the episode, but her company, Color of Genes, connects communities of color historically known to be underserved in human genetic research, testing, and counseling with culturally conscious genetic services and evidence-based health resources for improved health outcomes. So basically, we're closing the gap on these healthcare disparities. That's what I
Indeed.
Like to see.
Yes.
I am so excited because my first question for you, Dr. Karen, tell the listeners just a little bit about your life and how you got into genetics, you know? So tell me, why genetics?
Absolutely. Thank you so much, KB. This is really a pleasure to be here with you. And I'm really excited to get into episode 3. And so I am a nutritional geneticist. By training, I hold a PhD from Howard University in nutritional sciences and human genetics. So my background in research focuses on investigating exome sequencing and what's called genome-wide association scans, also known, as GWAS, of single nucleotide polymorphisms or genetic variants. The goal is really to study the genetic architecture of type 2 diabetes mellitus, hereditary disease risk. And so really my interest in human genetics began before I even pursued my PhD. I would say about a year before I applied for Howard, around the time that my grandmother Caroline passed away from type 2 diabetes complications. It was really then that I was interested in discovering, you know, what is this disease? Because I wanted to understand more about it. And that's what eventually led me to pursue a PhD where I could really investigate, you know, the genetic underpinnings of the disease. In 2021 is when I founded Color of Genes. And the goal really was to help underserved communities, especially communities of color who continually face health inequities in human genetics research, diagnostic testing, and genetic counseling. And this all, of course, sometimes happens due to pervasive factors such as race-based medical practices, which I'm happy to dive into a little bit later.
Listen, I am so sorry, you know, to hear about your grandmother, but it is so interesting how just this portion of her life really transformed yours, you know, from the inside out and helped give your life purpose and meaning. So that is something, you know, very positive to take out of that for sure. So I like to ask every guest, because I have had people on here who have never seen an episode of Grace. which is also wildly fascinating to me. So I like to ask, what is your relationship, your personal relationship with Grey's Anatomy? You know, have you seen this episode before and this is your second rewatch? You know, were you like a huge fan kind of watching with friends or family? You know, what did that relationship look like?
Absolutely. I love Grey's Anatomy. I started tuning in, this was like senior year in high school. This was back in the early 2000s. And so, yeah, I did have to rewatch this episode, but I do remember it vividly, especially because of the young girl who was portrayed with this genetic disorder and how she was essentially bullied in school and had to sort of put on this brave face, even though she was, you know, undergoing a very serious health condition. And so I really, really liked this episode. I say Grey's Anatomy is, I think, one of the most entertaining shows on television because it really is what you're doing. It like ties entertainment into important issues through lived experiences. And so in this case, talking about SEPA and bringing attention to the importance of rare diseases and hereditary disease risk, as well as the importance of genetic testing, really captivated me. And so definitely episode 3 would be one of my favorites.
Ooh, I love it. Okay, so let's get into the episode because, you know, there are a lot of highs, there are a lot of lows. I mean, truthfully, Megan's story is quite sad because she's been bounced around from, you know, home to home in the foster care system. She actually really adores these parents that she has now. She said they're the best family that she's had. But here she is, you know, kind of coming in with this unknown genetic condition, a lot of internal bleeding. She's going to have surgery. You know, things happen kind of aggressively and very quickly. And of course, her foster parents are concerned not only about her health and her well-being, but because of what it looks like, right? Like Alex, when he first meets her, thinks that she's being abused by the parents. I think a lot of that is just his like traumatic past and history kind of coming to the surface as well. So what are some of the best parts of this episode for you? Give me the highlights, you know, who had the best character moments? What was most upsetting or unsettling? And what did you find that you needed more or less of when it comes, you know, to Megan's case specifically even?
I really like how the episode showed the lived experiences of patients. Oftentimes we don't get to see that, especially in the case with young Megan. I think even just highlighting the disease that she was carrying, how rare it is. I also love the dynamics of the medical staff, like you pointed out with Meredith and sort of her being challenged with her relationships at work and trying to find that work-life balance. But more importantly, Megan really captivated me. You know, this young, tough character, you know, was putting on this brave face, battling yet a very, very serious genetic disorder. And I, you know, oftentimes we don't really know what those experiences are in the healthcare setting from a patient, especially when you're talking about a child in her case. So I really do appreciate how the episode raised awareness about her genetic disorder, and not just it being a genetic disorder, but it being a rare disease.
The wait is over. The Chi is back on Paramount Plus, and the stakes have never been higher. Everything changes on the South Side when a new threat comes to power in the Showtime original series from Emmy winner Lena Waithe. Battle lines will be drawn, alliances will shift, and danger lies around every corner, leaving everyone to wonder who they can trust. Visit ParamountPlus.com/TheShot to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. Subscription auto-renews. Restrictions apply.
Father's Day is coming, a day we celebrate the guy who's always there for us. To crack a dad joke. Well, you know what's not a dad joke? Getting $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker with the purchase of his favorite cocktail capsule pack. $50 off. No dad joke. See, this is a dad joke. I lost my glasses today, and guess who I bumped into? Everyone. But the Bartesian Cocktail Maker, it's no joke. Each cocktail capsule contains real fruit juices and all-natural bitters, so dad can make over 60 premium cocktails he loves. Sidecars, old fashions, gimlets, all with the push of a button. So, for the dad who loves a cocktail with friends and a good joke from time to time, get the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. $50 off now until Father's Day. Visit bartesian.com/father to get 50 off the best premium cocktail maker for dad at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
In fact, just a couple years, I believe, before the episode aired, was when the Human Genome Project was completed. And that was really sort of the first step to understand really truly genetic disorders and hereditary disease risk. And the episode, I think maybe if I could, extend the episode, maybe another hour, it would have been really nice to see, you know, what happened to young Megan after her surgery. At one point, she was scared, you know, she was trying to put on this brave face, but eventually she explained to the doctor that due to cost, she didn't want to undertake any surgery. I think it was really her fear. And SEPA, as we all know, unfortunately, in most cases, those who've been diagnosed with this genetic disorder, they don't survive beyond the age of 25. So I would love to see like exactly how Megan evolves from being a child into adulthood. Did she survive? How were her parents able to handle sort of seeing her evolve with this very serious disease? Also, I think when you think about rare disease, especially the research, I think that especially in this case with SEPA, more research is needed, because right now with SEPA and other rare diseases, we have very limited information as far as like how does this disorder impact other subpopulations like minoritized populations. Not a lot of research is out there. And if not, if we don't really address maybe some of the research in rare disease, SEPA and beyond, this could lead to missed opportunities. For example, in Megan being really being able to understand the genetic variation that she carries, or even, as I mentioned, in other populations where potentially other populations are not studied as much. So yeah, I would have loved, I think, overall to see exactly, you know, what happens to Megan. Does she survive? Does she reach adulthood, you know, with her genetic diagnosis?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, there's never enough time on Grey's, which makes sense. I mean, you know, they cut down the show. They want to make sure that at the heart of it, it's a relationship drama. And so the medical cases oftentimes are either wrapped up very quickly or it doesn't really feel finished, which makes sense. I mean, you know, again, we just don't have that type of time. But I agree, it would be interesting to have had a look back maybe in seasons later, you know, to maybe have Megan come back and see what that looked like. And especially because, I mean, you know, they're at season 19 now, so they have the time to have her come back to see what was going on. So when did you first come across or hear about congenital insensitivity to pain? And kind of elsewhere, which I'm actually more interested in, is it's what's the most intriguing genetic disorder you've learned about or taken an interest in over the years?
Absolutely. So I've heard of SEPA before. I think this episode really sort of brought it to light. And truly understanding the nature of the genetic disorder. And I think when I started my doctoral studies back in 2017, learning more about hereditary disease risk did help open my understanding up a little bit more about these types of genetic disorders. Beyond SEPA, there are other inherited genetic disorders that we can be diagnosed with. And in some cases, you don't feel the pain, right? In the case with SEPA. Or in some cases, you may not have a sense of smell. There is another congenital disease, I believe congenital anosmia, and that is a condition in which, beginning at birth, you lose your sense of smell. Of course, that could be hazardous, right? If you're living in an environment where you are exposed to toxins that could potentially create health burdens, some leading to morbidity, comorbidity, or mortality. And so this episode kind of really helped give, I think, an even greater understanding about genetic disorders, especially in a child, because oftentimes a lot of our research, as we know, is focused on a certain population. Usually those under 18 and those over 65 are considered underrepresented when we talk about age disparities. And so that's something that I thought was really intriguing. I think overall, as far as what I find to be one of the most intriguing genetic disorders that I've learned about, or even have taken interest in over the last few years, I would say, is genetic variants that are linked to type 2 diabetes mellitus, right? Mellitus, type 2 diabetes is unfortunately more prevalent among communities of color. For example, African-Americans are nearly twice as likely to be diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. And we know that leads to morbidity, comorbidity, and unfortunately, in some cases, mortality. And so one of the most significant genes that have been linked to type 2 diabetes is called transcription factor 7-like-2, or TCF7L2. That gene, although there's been tons of research done on it, has been understudied in populations of color, namely persons of African ancestry. And of course, when we don't understand the genetic underpinnings or genetic architecture of a disease, then we truly are missing out on advances in science. We have limited understanding on pathogenesis or pathophysiology. And unfortunately, we're not creating a diverse pool of genetic variation that scientists can use for scientific discovery. And so that gene I've taken a great interest in learning more about. This gene, by the way, is involved with regulating the expression of genes that are involved in lipid and glucose metabolism. You know, but unfortunately, due to underrepresentation of minority populations, namely persons of African ancestry and GWAS, which we mentioned earlier, this gene is understudied and primarily is understood in persons of European ancestry. In fact, my doctoral research involved investigating this gene where I found novel variants among communities of color, those subpopulations in the US, Nigeria, South Africa, Ghana, Kenya, and Uganda, where these novel variants were found to be common among these racial and ethnic minoritized populations to provide really a richly diverse human genetic understanding to hopefully further population health studies. And so, yeah, I would definitely say that gene, TCF7L2, has been and still is one of the most intriguing aspects of my research career, and really still trying to understand and learn more about how prevalent this gene and its variants are among understudied populations.
Yeah, and I love that it's coming back, you know, kind of full circle to that familial aspect for you and doing all the research, and that it's still at the top of mind how you can learn more about this in order to improve the communities that are just, you know, suffering with type 2 diabetes the most. So I love that. So let's get into SEPA. So according to the National Center for Advancing Translational Sciences, there are less than 1,000 cases of SEPA in the U.S. So it's interesting that they chose to really highlight this condition and feature it on the show. So I found an article from Tehran University, the Department of Pediatrics, and it involved just looking at 4 cases of SEPA. SEPA, I should note, is often characterized by self-mutilating behavior, which in her instance, you know, she's pulling out the staples out of her arm with her teeth. She's allowing people to kind of punch her repeatedly. In fact, she is truly a child, because the whole episode she's just saying, punch me, just try it, punch me. It's like, okay, stop asking people to punch you, Megan. But it also is, you know, something that happens are recurrent infections, fever, and more. And so the subjects featured in this case are between ages 7 and 13. So I'm curious to hear just a little bit more about kind of what you found in terms of, you know, this genetic disorder, how many people it impacts, and if you thought that this was a realistic kind of depiction of this of this disorder based on your research.
Oh, yes, for sure. You know, SEPA is a very serious inherited genetic disorder. And because of its rarity, it's really not understood or well understood. Or in some cases, those who may be carriers of genes that are associated with this genetic disorder are truly unaware that they are in danger, in Megan's case, until they've been diagnosed genetically. And so it is an inherited genetic disorder, which means that it's passed down from both parents who actually don't show symptoms. And that's why genetic testing is imperative. And truly, it happens in terms of diagnosis when one or more genes aren't working properly. And most of the time, in order to actually learn how to treat this genetic disorder, it comes from education in nature, right? Patients, for example, have to learn how to avoid getting injured. As in Megan's case, she was self-mutilating herself. And so some of the other educational treatment options would be, you know, at various moments for patients to assess themselves after an injury, you know, checking to see if they have any injuries And then seeking treatment immediately should they occur. So because SIPA is an extremely dangerous genetic disorder, I mentioned earlier, most patients, according to the scientific literature, do not unfortunately live past the age of 25. And that's another reason why I think more funding in this space is needed to really build a robust evidence base to truly understand this disease and even better treatment options.
Yeah, you're right, because honestly, there could be a number of things happening. I mean, most disease bases have like very, very similar factors that engage them. So, you know, when you're saying you're having recurrent infections, that could be a whole host of other things. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not necessarily directed at SIPA when you have, you know, a host of infections or you have a fever. I mean, literally a fever is almost the baseline for so many different disorders and diseases. So that wouldn't necessarily be the baseline. And depending on the age group, self-mutilation might not be either. You know, that could be a whole host of things. So you're right. I think, you know, like genetic testing, particularly in infancy, particularly with SIPA. And of course, we know she didn't get it because she was adopted. It made it seem like she entered the foster care system at birth. We don't know much about her birth parents. And so, you know, it's interesting because they did not perform a genetic test, you know, prior to her coming in with these specific set of symptoms and then doing some additional scans. So before we get out of here, you know, real quick, I just want you to dive into, you know, your heart and soul, your passion, Color of Genes. Tell the listeners, you know, kind of where they can read more about Color of Genes and how they can support.
Oh, absolutely. First, I wanted to say I had an amazing time with you, KB. This was really, really awesome. And I commend you on all the work that you're doing as well to highlight these very important issues in a very fun way. So thank you so much for having me as a guest. And with regard to Color of Genes, really, truly something I'm incredibly passionate about because our goal is to put the health needs of individuals as well as their families first. And we do that through providing the highest quality of health education, access to evidence-based health resources, including culturally conscious genetic services and products, and genetic professionals in three domains. And those include human genetics, health promotion, and disease prevention. So like Alex, I'm incredibly passionate about helping patients, especially underrepresented patients. And if you wanted to learn more, especially your wonderful listeners out there, feel free to visit www.colorofgenes.com. And I'd be happy to engage and or provide access to some of those resources that we have. But again, thank you so much for having me. This has been a really, really awesome dialogue.
Oh my goodness. I'm so excited for everyone to just be able to read up on all of the work that you are currently doing and will continue to do on Color of Genes. Just your passion, your heart for, you know, serving the underserved communities and providing a way for all of us to lead and live healthier lives and live longer and use genetics to our advantage in order to do so and to help in that way is just so beautiful to see. So thank you for all of the work that you do and continue to do. And thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to be on this show, to dive into SIPA in this way and to be able to shine a light on this, but not only this, type 2 diabetes mellitus and, you know, more genetic disorders. Like, I think we do need to start having more open dialogues about it. And honestly, that's why I created this show, just a safe space and a fun space to be able to dive into, you know, some very interesting cases that are happening to us. And I love talking to problem solvers and people who are doing the work on the ground, and you are one of them. So just thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure. I appreciate this opportunity, and I look forward to seeing what I know will be a really, really successful path that you are forging ahead. And so thank you, thank you, thank you.
Well, that's it for this episode of On Call with KB. Join us each and every Thursday for brand new episodes where I chat with an expert and a super fan about the science behind the scenes. Until then.
Listen to On Call with KB on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
You wouldn't expect to hear that we're America's third best city for beer like this one. Or home to vibes like this. And this. It might surprise you that we're top 10 for immersive art that's like...
Whoa.
And... Not to mention, we have one of the top zoos in the country. So can a city with the country's best pro soccer team, ranking as a top culinary destination in the world, be in your own backyard? Yes, Columbus. Plan your summer at experiencecolumbus.com/summer.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.